Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great day today, whether you're listening live on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620 on Saturday afternoon. And we're actually on Saturday afternoon this week. FSU played football last night instead of Saturday, so we get to bring you a show this week. We're excited about that. Of course, anytime we're preempted or anything like that, you can always listen to the podcast version of the show. Or just if 4 o'clock on Saturday is not convenient for you, anywhere you get your podcast, just look for Let's Go Pensacola, and you can always keep up with what we're talking about here on the show. Please welcome, Jeremy and I had a little conversation this week, and we talk a lot about what we're going to do on this show and whatnot, and we've fallen into this habit over time of introducing Jeremy the same way every week. Jeremy Branch is with us, and kind of dates back to what this show used to be versus what this show kind of has become, in that it used to be very much here's a guest or two and we're going to talk about stuff, and it was different people every week, and we've kind of fallen into this thing where Jeremy really is kind of a true co-host at this point. So it's weird because I'm the one in the studio, and we've talked about maybe changing that too. But either way, I wanted to address that because it's something we talked about, and it's something I agree with. This is as much Jeremy's show as it is mine. So Jeremy, here we are.
Thanks, man. I do appreciate it. And it, as a creator myself, I understand how things evolve over time, right?
Yeah.
And for a long time, you kind of had a rotating door, and I was always super stoked to be a part of it. But I think the two of us have got a pretty good rhythm going on after doing it for so long, and we do it week after week. So, like, I do feel, like a part of the team now. So I appreciate the acknowledgement, and I think we got a bunch of fun stuff we're going to talk about today.
Well,
and
maybe something that
might need a warning.
We can also call it an early birthday present. It's Jeremy's birthday this weekend,
yeah.
Too. So.
Yeah, thanks, bud.
So we do have a lot to talk about this week, as we do every week. But interestingly enough, everything that's going on in entertainment this week, everything that we talked about this week, does kind of veer into semi-political topics.
Not by design, even.
Yeah, for just about everything. Not everything, but just about everything. It's not by design. It's just what happens to be what's going on in entertainment right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to try to, we don't consider this a political show. I know that there are a lot of political shows on News Radio 92.3. This is not really one of them. And while, we certainly have our own points of view, that's not really what this show is about. And so we're going to try to talk about these things, and we may talk about what these things are saying politically, but we're not trying to endorse a specific viewpoint or say, yeah, this is right, this is wrong, or anything like that. As much as possible, we're human beings. Our opinions may color a little bit here. Certainly our opinion on the quality of the things we're talking about is going to weigh in. But we're not here to say team red, team blue, you're right, you're wrong, anything like that. So, take that with a grain, if you will, or a whole shake or salt if you need to. But, just fair warning. And I never know how many people are listening. So maybe this is the time we finally find out how many people are listening. And when we get the deluge of complaints about what we're saying, or the deluge of compliments about what we're saying, that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world too. You could also always email me at gopensacola@gmail.com. I would be very happy to hear from you and what you think of the show. Even if you're unhappy with something we say on the show, we'd be happy to hear from you. But there is a lot going on that's political. So let's get the one thing out of the way that's not political. That's just good, happy entertainment news. We got the first promotional still, I guess is the best way to put it, from the forthcoming long-awaited Spaceballs 2, The Quest for More Money. I don't know if they're actually calling it that, but they should, because that's what they said in the first movie. That was Mel Brooks' line. It was a great line. But it is going to be Spaceballs 2 in any event. They are making a sequel to Spaceballs. And for the first time in 30 years, we've got live-action Rick Moranis in a movie. And we've got a photo out there of Rick Moranis as he appears today as the iconic Dark Helmet.
It's so cool.
I'm so excited about that. Rick Moranis was just always one of my favorite actors growing up. And, you know, he stepped away from the spotlight and mainly to raise his kids, as I understand it. You know, he if I remember correctly, lost his wife and and became a single parent. And, you know, that's he said, you know, my kids are more important, which is great. That's awesome. But, you know, there's a lot of us that love him out here. I know there's been a lot of attempts to get him back before this. I know they really wanted him back for the Ghostbusters reboot and then legacy sequels. And he turned down both of those. There's been some other things, I think, that he's been involved with over the years that have been revived that other than, you know, briefly doing a Bob and Doug McKenzie reunion special in 2007, which was not aired in the States. And he did a Mint Mobile commercial with Ryan Reynolds. That's been it. We have not seen him on camera in 30 years.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that was like omnipresent through the 80s and early 90s and just made so many great movies. And the fact that Spaceballs 2 is the one that he's coming back for means that even if it's not the perfect follow-up to Spaceballs, it is definitely going to make me super happy to see Rick Moranis back.
It gives me hope for this movie because, you know, I was a little dubious about this film, but, you know, I can't imagine that Moranis signed on if there's not a good script.
Absolutely.
So it gives me hope that at least there's a good script and hopefully the execution will be good and we'll really look forward to it. We're going to address the elephant in the room next. We're not going to spend a lot of time talking about this, but the... last week or so, we weren't on last week, so that's part of why we haven't gotten to this before, but the short-lived suspension / cancellation of the Jimmy Kimmel Show, however you want to address it. It was always couched as a suspension from ABC. And of course, still not on in our Pensacola market because our local affiliate is a Sinclair-owned station, and Sinclair is still boycotting Jimmy Kimmel over what they say were comments that he made in the wake of Charlie Kirk's assassination. It's been interesting. Like I said, we're trying not to come down on one side or the other here. But I do want to ask Jeremy what you thought of his return monologue, if you got a chance to see it.
So Kimmel was kind of my guy. He's the only West Coast talk show host. And I've always liked kind of his access to having big celebrities and all of that kind of stuff, because they're right there in town most of the time.
Sure.
I thought his return monologue was very, very good. It was heartfelt. I think he addressed the fact that not everybody interprets things exactly the same way, and that's valid. He didn't delegitimize anybody's feelings about it. I would say, and this is apolitical, completely politically agnostic, if we allow people to censor speech, that is a path that is hard to come back from, and if it's speech that you disagree with today, it may be speech that you agree with tomorrow. So we have to do the best that we can to uphold voices, even those we don't agree with.
Yeah, I agree with you there, Jeremy. I'm a big believer in the First Amendment, and I think all Americans should be. I think, you know, we can, now that means every entity has their own right to the First Amendment. So you have the right to say things I don't like. I have the right to say things you don't like in return, including not spending my money with you. And and the networks and the local affiliates, et cetera, they all have those same rights too. It's when the government's action is influencing that it becomes a problem. People as diverse as Ted Cruz and lots of people on the other side have said the same thing in the last week.
Rogan
or so.
Came out and defended him, a lot of the big comics.
Yeah. We've got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Just like the water.
she's singing, ooh, ooh, ooh. Just like the white winged dove sings the song, sounds like she's singing, ooh, baby, ooh, say ooh. And the days go by like a strand in the wind, in the web that is my own, I begin again. Said to my friend, baby, nothing else matters.
Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I'm your host, Julio Diaz. Jeremy Branch with me, of course. And we are going to be talking about the return, the long-awaited return of Gen V on Amazon Prime. It's been some time since season one of Gen V. And in fairness, there's unfortunately some real-world reasons behind that, in addition to just the amount of time it takes to produce a show of this nature and this quality. They were having their first table read. And if you don't know what a table read is when the entire cast gets together, they sit around the table and they read the script together for the first time and start working through what the script is going to be. So they had gotten into the first table read for season two. Season one was in 2023, by the way, just for the record. So it's been 2 years. They'd gotten together for their first table read. And unfortunately, one of the lead actors in season one, Chance Perdomo, was killed in a motorcycle accident. And you know, we lost this, you know, very, very talented young actor at a very young age. I think he was like 23 or something like that. Very, very young, 27, just looked it up. They kind of had to go back to the drawing board a little bit and rework the season to deal with not having access to that character. They chose to not, you know, recast the character. They chose to write the actor's death into the show and kill off the character off screen. And we're dealing with a lot of the repercussions of his loss in this season. Amazon always does this weird drop of a new season of a series where they do a multiple episodes right of the first week, and then go weekly. So we're already halfway.
For those of us that listen to like breakdowns of episodes and stuff, because typically you get one per episode, but for Gen V, everybody had to drop 1 through 3 as one episode, and then 4 is the next one.
Yeah, so yeah, we're halfway through the season already, because the boys in Gen V only do 8-episode seasons, if I recall correctly. We're also very much having to deal with the repercussions of what happened in season 4 of The Boys. So yeah. I would say that this is a series that it's kind of hard to watch if you're not also watching The Boys, which was true.
Absolutely.
Was true in season one as well, but a little more so. And to the flip side of it is I think that if you are watching The Boys and you're not watching Gen V, you're doing yourself a disservice, maybe to the point of it being hard to understand what's going on in the flagship series. And I think there was some of that in season 4 of the Boys. You certainly saw a few of the Gen V characters pop up, and there was some mention of some things that happened in Gen V in season 4 of The Boys, but I don't feel like it was, and you tell me if you feel differently, Jeremy, I don't feel like it was going to be incomprehensible to someone who hadn't watched Gen V.
No, I totally agree.
But
and I, you know, those are bold choices to make. I do see the purpose of it. And this is going to come up again on another show that we're talking about. But I think in particular, season four of The Boys and Gen V season two are so closely tied into each other that you kind of need to see both.
Yeah, I don't know how you could follow a lot of what's happening in season two of Gen V without having watched at least, you know, well, having watched The Boys, period. But I also don't know how many people are watching Gen V that didn't watch The Boys.
Right.
I mean, I think it is well viewed and it is, you know, getting good reviews and all that kind of stuff. And there's fan buzz about it. I don't think it's quite at the same level that The Boys is, but it's pretty close. The Boys, of course, has become one of the top streaming series, period, and you know has become quite critically acclaimed as well. Number of Emmy nominations, all that kind of thing. Very interested to see as we roll into the final season, which I guess is going to be next year. Does that sound right to you?
Mm-hmm.
Where this is going to stand and how they put a bow on it, and what goes on beyond that, because there are other plans to continue this universe despite ending the flagship series. You know, they're already working on, I believe they're already filming a Soldier Boy spinoff series, but that is going to be a prequel series. So that leaves you some opening there. But there's also a The Boys Mexico series that's in the works.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that is, I don't know if it's going to be in Spanish, but it's certainly going to be led by Hispanic voices. So we'll have to see what comes of that. I'm assuming that's going to take place after the end of the Boys series. I also am assuming they're going to continue Gen V. I don't see why they wouldn't, at least not so far. You know, we don't know what's going to happen in this season that may make that obsolete. You know, for all we know, that you know, this is The Boys. They could blow up the school at the end of the season for all we know.
Yeah,
as long as some of these characters are still around, which again, who knows? It's The Boys. They might kill everybody. If any universe has ever shown a willingness to do a rocks fall, everybody dies.
Was a scene in episode four where I thought we were definitely about to lose a major character, and it didn't happen. But it keeps you guessing in that way.
Yeah. So. Again, you know, we said this at the top of the show. We're going to say it again here. You know, this universe, if you don't watch The Boys in Gen V, then you may not know. But if you do watch them, you absolutely know that this show is very much a satire of current political conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And has been from the start. And weirdly has been predictive in some ways. But in a way that, like, in the time frame that it takes for the show to get made, by the time it comes out, it looks like it's commenting on something that happened after it was written, when really it kind of forecasted what was coming.
Yeah.
And I think that we're in that same boat right now. I think that, you know, again, this would have been written probably a year ago. But a lot of the stuff that is coming up in this season of Gen V is very much commenting on things that are going on in the world and ends up looking very timely. Now, we're not going to sit here and tell you whether we think that what they're saying is right or wrong. We're going to talk about the execution. We're going to talk about the world. We're going to talk about what we like and don't like about the show, but we're not really going to be talking in depth about the political viewpoint, other than do they do a good job of expressing their political viewpoint? And we'll get into spoilers on the show later, but Jeremy, I think this is maybe a place where you and I differ based on something you were saying to me before the show started.
Yeah.
I think they are maybe a little ham-handed here and there, but I think overall are doing a good job of satirizing what's happening in the world right now. And you expressed to me that you think maybe they're not.
So it is so inextricably linked to things like identity politics that it's hard to extrapolate without kind of going into my critiques of it.
Okay.
And in that way, I think the show very well articulates what its point is and what it's trying to get at, but it is ultra-focused on things like identity politics while also trying to shoehorn in the kind of typical crass humor of The Boys. And society has changed since both of these shows came out. And I respect artists that have a vision and, like, have a point of view, but I like satire that's a little more scathing of society as a whole. And maybe because the institutions that it has chosen to set its sights on are the institutions of power, maybe I should respect it more, but I do feel that it's like, it's really, really hard for me to sit and enjoy it when I feel like I'm scrolling threads when I'm watching it.
Yeah, I get that. But I mean, at the same time, this is a series based on 20-something college students. And I mean, I think in that regard, it is depicting what those people are going through, both from an identity standpoint and identity politics standpoint, from the way the political system manipulates those identity politics, and the way the system is trying to churn out people to do their bidding.
Yeah.
For one way or another. And I think that in that regard, it has a lot to say. Now, do you think in general, Jeremy, do you think that your opinion is swayed by just being tired of what's going on in the news, or do you and feeling like that's not what you want for your entertainment, or do you think that the execution is suffering compared to season one?
That's a good question. And it's hard to pull one thing out of the other. I think in execution, the cast is like, they're pretty good, but and it's not as if I can't watch 20-something female cast members in college and enjoy that. It just feels like it's operating in about that mental capacity. And I like the cast. I really like the cast of The Boys. I feel like you could call this show The Girls, and that would be valid. And maybe that's just it, is that the POV is a little bit harder for me to relate with in a way that's like meaningful. But I remember really liking season one, so I don't know, man.
Well, that's interesting, and I have a couple of perspectives on that. Let's talk about that when we come back. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Before I drink, and I'm so caught up in the news of who likes me and who hates you, and I'm so tired that I might quit my job, start a new life, and they'd all be so disappointed, cause who am I if not exploited? And I'm so sick of 17, I'm over this teenage dream. If someone tells me one more time, enjoy your youth, I'm gonna cry. And I don't stick up for myself, I'm anxious and nothing can help. And I wish I'd done this before, and I wish people liked me more. All I did was come up. Brutal out here.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I'm your host, Julio Diaz. Jeremy Branch is my co-host. He's here with me. And man, that song, which was used in season two of Gen V, really does kind of hit the nail on the head with the themes of this season. I don't know if you're paying attention to the lyrics there, but that's Brutal by Olivia Rodrigo. And it really does kind of talk about what young people today are going through in terms of, you know, how they deal with the world. And that is really kind of thematically what's going on with this show. Now, Jeremy, before the break, you had said something about how you felt like, in a way, you could call this The Girls as opposed to The Boys.
Uh-huh.
And whether you were maybe your consideration of this season might be diminished by that not being a point of view that you can relate to. Is that a fair way to sum up what you said?
I think, yeah, that is definitely an aspect of it.
Okay, so I had a couple thoughts about that. I don't necessarily think that's by design. I think it's partially just where we ended up with because of the unfortunate loss of Chance Perdomo. But this is a show that does have a more feminine viewpoint. It always has had more female lead characters than male lead characters. It had last season two female showrunners, this season down to just one female showrunner. And that's another thing I want to get to in just a moment. But it's interesting because there has been stuff in The Boys that kind of satirizes that performative. It's actually become a meme now. The girls get it done scene that was in the season three of The Boys, if I'm remembering correctly, yes. Where they're making the Rise of the Seven movie, and the three girls team up, and they have this big. Which in and of itself is a satirization of the scene in Avengers Endgame where all the female characters got together and worked together, which was really ham-handed in that film, and so it was intentionally ham-handed in the satire. But I think this show is doing that right. Like there have been a few moments that felt to me like girls get it done, but not from a disingenuous place.
I can agree. I do feel like I come off more negative on it due to just a general feeling that I'm having, because you are right. You can definitely feel there's a female perspective in it.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing why I was asking you whether you think it's a difference in execution between season one and season two, because we do also have the showrunner change.
It feels a little bit different because of that.
Yeah. So if you don't know, season one, the showrunners were a team who I've actually been following for some time. And why did their name just go out of my head? I'm going to get it's Butters and Fizikas. I don't want to get their first names wrong is what I'm getting at. Tara Butters and Michelle Fizikas, if I'm remembering correctly. And I'm just trying to double check that I'm right about that. So they started out. Yeah, I did get the names correct. Thank goodness. They've been a team for some time. They co-created the show Reaper, which was the first place that I really honed in on them. Really loved that show, short-lived show that if you get a chance, you should check it out. But they've worked together on a lot of things, including some Marvel stuff, and they've showrun various things together. And in the last couple of years, in the last year or two, Tara Butters has decided to take a step away from work in general. So Michelle Fizikas is now running the show solo. So there is that perspective of maybe there's something that was missing that Tara Butters brought to the table that's not there anymore. I have not personally noticed anything that I felt like was a big drop off in quality, or that was a major, viewpoint shift or anything like that. But I'm wondering if that's something you're perceiving.
I like the addition of Hamish Linklater, by the way. I think he's a cool character.
He's great, and that's something we need to talk about is the mysteries with that character.
Julio, and I don't think I would have necessarily picked up on it had you have not mentioned that. It's something that I've struggled to put my finger on, but I feel like the first one did a good job justifying itself as not seeming like the thing The Boys was parodying, where season two kind of feels like the whole joke of what The Boys was in the first place.
Do you think that that's because maybe the show is in this unfortunate place where it has to serve the storylines of The Boys as well as serving its own storylines, versus season one, the storylines were a little more independent?
That's also a good observation, and I would imagine probably plays into it as well.
Which is funny because I don't think that, and maybe some of that is just what has happened in the world since season four of The Boys ended, and how much we've been inundated with what has happened in the world since season four of The Boys ended, because I don't recall you having those kind of feelings about season four of The Boys.
No. And I think by season four of The Boys, I'm pretty bought into all of the characters. I think Homelander's terrifying. What's his name? The the main guy is also equally terrifying. Yeah. Like, I just think that's cast is really good.
And that's the looming threat that's out there over this entire season of Gen V as well. Like, we haven't seen Anthony Starr on camera. We've seen his image. Uh-huh. He is very much a Big Brother is watching you over this campus.
Yeah.
But we haven't actually seen him. We did see him at the end of Gen V season one. But there's always that threat of at any moment Homelander could swoop in and we're all toast.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, do you think that it's hard to approach these kind of things in an entertainment program now because we're just faced with so much of it in the world that you don't want to...
Very, very difficult. And like I mentioned Threads, I don't think you spend a lot of time on there, and I really wish I didn't.
No, I don't even have an account.
It feels aggressively one-sided, and I get that. I totally understand that. But like, I feel like if you backdoor things and kind of force people to confront realities that they might not be comfortable with, it can sometimes be more effective than just sermonizing to your congregation.
So you think that's the feeling that you're getting here, is there's just too much preaching to the choir and not enough?
Yeah. Yeah.
You kind of mentioned, you know, satire versus just doing the thing.
Uh-huh.
And like, is too much of this season for you, like the Peter Griffin, he said the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of the references that they choose to make either seem too topical or not topical enough. And it's just not extracted enough from our reality. And then in other ways, it's like really fantastical. Like, what makes Marie's powers more powerful than Victoria's powers or more powerful than Kate's powers? I guess like it's yet to be seen, but like they're all kind of like equally powerful. And then also Homelander's super powerful. So like, I'm curious to see how all that stuff plays out. It leaves me feeling emotionally exhausted.
I can understand that, but I also don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. There's two perspectives here. Like, I get where that may not be where you want to go when you want to just turn your brain off.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's hard to make that your leisure time. And I felt that way about some other things over the past that have been very good, but it's just like, I'm just not ready to deal with that right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I can absolutely understand that perspective. That said, I think there's enough other stuff here that I really enjoy that I don't let that keep me away from it.
Valid. Yeah, for sure.
I think the performances are across the board are fantastic. I really love this cast. I continue to say, I think Emma's been my favorite character pretty much from the start, and she just continues mm-hmm. to prove why she's the best character on the show. The no pun intended growth of that character is just fascinating to watch.
Yeah, I like the water pipe scene was pretty fun.
Yeah, and then we've got the overall, you know, the overall mysteries that are being developed in this season, which I think are very interesting, and that they stand on their own regardless of the political stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, the overall conspiracy, the overall who is Dean Cipher and what are his motivations. That's the Hamish Linkletter character that you mentioned earlier. And he is just knocking this out of the park. There's a lot of theories about what's going on with him. We're not going to get too much into that because we're not going to spend a whole lot more talking about Gen V. We want to get to another show in the last segment here. But I remain riveted by this world. I think this is some of the best stuff going on in television right now. And while I get where you're coming from about the homework of it all,
mm-hmm.
I guess is the best way to put it. The having to have this stuff in your face when you're trying to not think about that stuff. It's the rewards I think are there for me that I'm going to continue. And I'm very excited to see where the rest of the season goes. We're going to take a break, back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
I be getting through now that I must try to leave it all behind? Did you see what you have done to me? So hard to justify. Slowly it's passing by.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is on with us. And, you know, Jeremy, of course, as we all know, it is between the Beatles and Halloween for the greatest rock band of all time.
Absolutely.
You know,
I agree more.
You know, it's hard to compare what Mick, Paul, George, and Ringo did together. But... that, of course, is what happens in the alternate Earth that we are currently exploring on Peacemaker. We're now heading into the home stretch of season two of this great series on HBO Max. And I have to say that there are a lot of people that called What This World Is. I am one of them, but I am like a longtime DC nerd. And if you're not a DC nerd, you might have been pretty shocked about some of the imagery that you saw at the end of this episode and what happened at the end of the sixth episode, which just dropped on Thursday. So we're gonna get pretty spoilery here, and we'll put up the spoiler warning. But if you've been following this series, you know you're dealing with Chris Smith, Peacemaker, played by John Cena, has access to this quantum unfolding chamber where his equipment is stored. And through that chamber, there's access to supposedly 99 other dimensions and other dimensional worlds. And he has discovered this other world where he is the hero that he wants to be. His dad is alive. They have a great relationship. His brother never died. The three of them are the top superheroes in the world. And, you know, everything seems to be hunky-dory. And so after, you know, just getting himself, you know, continually kicked in the groin in our world, he says, that's it, I'm going over there and I'm just going to stay over there, because he accidentally killed his doppelganger over there. So he can go in, take his doppelganger's place, and apparently live happily ever after, or so he thinks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that world's version of Amelia Harcourt is in love with him and he's in love with her. He's in love with his dimensions version of Amelia Harcourt, but this is enough of a substitute for him. You know, he craves this adulation. He's always craved this love of family that he's never had. And he sees all of that in this world. Now, there have been other very subtle things going on in the background in this world that if you weren't paying close attention, you may not have noticed.
I'm going to be honest. Let me chime in real quick.
Mm-hmm.
The episode's called, I think, The Ignorance of Chris.
Ignorance is Chris.
Ignorance is, yeah, okay, and as a play on Ignorance is Bliss. And I am guilty as a probably white audience member of not even picking up on the first run-through or whatever that there were actually no people of color in this entire world. It took Harcourt all of like 5 minutes to realize something was fishy. And I love that.
Yeah. So that's been going on in the background. At no point in the time, in the times that our Peacemaker has gone over to this universe, have we seen any Hispanics, Asians, African-Americans, you know, Native Americans, nobody but Caucasians.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the background characters, everybody walking around in the background has been Caucasian. You know, all the extras, all the, you know, all that kind of stuff.
This looks like TV for the last 40 years to me.
which is a fair criticism. And as we discover in this episode, that is because this is a world that is ruled by Nazis.
Yeah.
For those of us who are DC fans of longstanding nature, I guess is the best way to put it. We called some time ago that this is what in the DC universe is known as Earth X. It is a world where the Nazis won World War II and ended up ruling the entire Earth, basically. And this is a world where the preeminent superheroes were a team called the Freedom Fighters, who were basically the underground rebellion against the Nazi regime. Mm-hmm. And they were led, these were characters that DC acquired from Quality Comics. So it was characters like Uncle Sam, Phantom Lady, The Ray, Doll Man, The Human Bomb. These may not be characters that you know well, and I don't know if that's going to end up being relevant or not. It may very well. But it's also interesting because Peacemaker is also an acquired character. Peacemaker was one of the characters that were acquired from Charlton Comics when Charlton Comics ended. So there's a little parallel going on there. But, you know, Chris has been living in this world where he was seeing only what he wanted to see.
Yeah.
And that, you know, and now his eyes have been opened that, oh, this is not a good place. And
this episode had some of the funniest scenes of any episode of Peacemaker. I absolutely love Vigilante now. And that last shot of Danielle running down the road and then being like, one got away.
Oh, one God, it's away. So chilling.
My God, I was crying laughing.
Yeah. So, you know, the entire 11th Street Kids crew comes over to that universe to get Chris back.
Uh-huh.
And they don't know at first that anything's, you know, that different there either. And they all go off on their own little missions. Vigilante is obsessed with the idea of meeting his other self. So he goes to meet his other self. And Harcourt gets wrapped up in being taken to Argus and the whole thing. Everybody goes off on their own way. And Adebayo decides that she's going to go take a walk, not thinking anything of it. You know, hey, I'm an American. I'm going to go take a walk down the street. And everybody freaks out because one of the black people got out.
It's like, what's that invasion of the body snatchers? Everybody's just pointing at her.
Yeah. And she, you know, she's being chased by an angry mob just for being who she is. That's a statement right there, my friends. And
this is
a world that I think if it knew the Chris Smith that we know would probably not accept him either.
Mm-mm.
Because our Chris is pretty much openly bisexual.
Flawed as he might be.
Yeah.
He's never been shown to really be a bigot, or at least
no.
Since the beginning of Peacemaker.
Not at all. Not, you know, Adebayo has become his best friend. You know, he has his flaws. He was raised by a white supremacist.
Uh-huh.
But he himself has not continued that. He's a flawed guy, but at his heart, he's a good guy.
Yeah.
And they're all at this point pretty much. This is an episode that was kept under wraps because James Gunn said that this was a big turning point and that it was one of his favorite things that he has ever shot, this episode and the final episode of this season. So I understand why he kept us under wraps. I don't think it was as big a surprise as he thinks it was.
Wait, I think the other thing might be the bigger surprise.
Okay, well, spoiler warning, hit me with the other thing.
Okay, so while all of this is going on, Rick Flag has been continuing to locate Chris. Well, in order to do this, he's going to have to find a way to get into this pocket dimension or the place where they're traveling between worlds. Well, who would know how to do that? If you watch Superman, you know that Lex Luthor, this evil genius, is in prison, and he has the technology to be able to do it. So Rick goes and signs a deal with the devil.
So were you surprised by that because you didn't expect to see Nicholas Holt?
Was shocked that Nicholas Holt was in it, and because now we are in a realm, and we talked about this in Gen V, where Superman and Peacemaker are inextricably linked, And due to the nature of the content, I am kind of shocked that they ended up making it so explicit.
Here's the thing. I think that this is kind of a somewhat of a one-way street. I think that there you can reference Superman in this. I don't think you can reference too much of what happened in Peacemaker in the next Superman movie. And I think that's what's going to happen.
Fair.
I think that's what's going to happen. And I think that's how you get to the happy medium here. And I think that's what we're going to get. And we, you know, we heard Lex use some language that he wouldn't have used in the Superman movie, for example. So, you know, I think it works overall. I liked that a lot. I'm really, you know, continuing to enjoy this series, and I'm continuing to enjoy James Gunn's take on the DC universe. I'm very intrigued about where we go from here because I did expect this. I am also intrigued by the fact that the vigilante of this world is in league with the Sons of Liberty, which is the rebel group that we saw in this world earlier. So mm-hmm. he is apparently a freedom fighter. I'm using that term intentionally in uh-huh. this world. And I'm really wondering if we're going to see more of the freedom fighters in terms of the characters that we know from the comics. I would be very excited to see that. It would be fun. It's a deep cut. It's a big pull, but you know, James Gunn's the kind of guy that does that kind of thing. So
you know where this show stumbles. I mean, where Gen V stumbles, I think this show just has a really great stride. And you could say there's a lot of parallels to topical stuff, but it works for me.
I think this one is just more fun.
Yeah.
And that's more of its stated goal, is to be more fun. I think the Boys universe is fun too, but it's fun in a different way. This sometimes has a sick sense of humor, but not in the same way.
Yeah.
But you know, we'll continue to see where both of these shows, and we'll compare and contrast, and we will be back with you for a short show next week. We'll only have 30 minutes before the FSU kickoff, but we will be with you next week. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.